The date is November 11th, 1994, and we're watching The Santa Claus. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Merry Christmas!
Hello, and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the dancer to my prancer.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
And, well, four Christmases now that we have been around with this podcast, and there has been someone that has been here with us in the Christmas season for the other three goddamn years, so we had to have him back. So please welcome back fan favorite, Mr. Joel Sims.
Hello, hello, gentlemen. Thank you for having me back, and thank you for describing me like I'm one of like Scrooge's Christmas spirits that haunts him.
That's
you
right.
Know, I'm back every year, and I'm just like a curse on this podcast.
You sure are. But, you know, a good curse. If there is such thing as a good curse, you are the good curse. That's a movie title right there. The good curse.
Good curse.
Write that down.
Sure.
Yeah, I am writing that down right now. Okay. So, well, this week we are looking back at November 1994 when the movies in theaters were Stargate, Don Juan DeMarco, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, Interview with the Vampire, and of course our movie for today, The Santa Claus, which earned $190.3 million on a $22 million budget. A staggering 190. Wow. Yeah. Joel just round mouth. You've got Edward Munch's The Scream going on over there.
Yeah.
You are shocked by $190 million.
That floored me. I thought that it was going to be 380 at least.
Oh, okay. Not high enough.
No. That's a crazy amount of money. I forget how much money things make.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, there will be spoilers ahead, so please don't call the effective liberating flight squad on us.
I see just... you reading that.
I was like, I had to do a quick Google search.
You had to check the notes. Yeah.
Please
get the wording right.
Please, if you don't want this movie spoiled for you, hit pause now, go watch it, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
Yeah, this movie's almost 30 years old. That's crazy. And still new The Santa Claus stuff coming into this franchise. That's insane.
Well, now hey, that I know it made $190 million, it doesn't surprise me.
You see why, yeah. Well,
now that I think that this series is, in the way that I'm a curse on this podcast, a curse on Tim Allen's life.
Oh, yeah?
Just follows him forever. Yeah.
Oh, well, it keeps paying him, though. I mean,
yeah, this where's my money?
Yeah, this is the house that Tool Time built, and this is the house that Santa built. I mean, you know, got one for each coast.
That's all.
All right, well, I found five festive taglines here for this Christmas movie.
Is that a new lyric for the 12 Days of Christmas?
I sure, yeah. Five festive taglines. Ba-dump, bump, bump. You have to have the Miss Piggy ba-dump, bump, bump in there.
Of course.
Yeah. Well, number one, what if your dad was Santa Claus?
What if?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Just poses the question, throws it out there to the reader of this poster.
Many philosophers have been asking, yeah.
Oh, yeah, Socrates. Like he started that whole question. Yeah. Well, number two, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. And that one ends in an ellipses. Just, you know, I like pointing out punctuation. The first one had a question mark, yeah. Yeah, it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas is the second tagline.
Plagiarism.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Far from the most original thing I've ever heard.
No, exactly. Like, they're scraping the bottom of the barrel. They lack very much in the creativity department on this one. Well, number three.
Surely.
You've never seen Santa quite like this before.
Too derivative.
Yeah, a little bit. I don't believe that has me lining up outside the theater opening day.
Hell yeah, it does.
What a thrill that is.
Yeah, it sure is. Well, you've never number four, Scott Kelvin must become Santa. No if or and, just one big but.
Sure.
I should go into marketing.
Yeah,
I really should go into marketing.
It seems easy. I've seen town slogans out there that are terrible. I mean, you know, it seems like if you are just a slogan guy, yeah, I'll write some taglines for you.
Yeah.
Yeah, no if and, just one big but.
Give me $100,000, please. Thank you.
Well, number five, this is the one I save for last because I think this one is actually legitimately kind of clever. This Christmas, the snow hits the fan.
I don't mind it.
I mean, it's as dirty as you're going to get in a kid's movie, like in a Disney movie, so.
Yeah, I don't know. Not feeling it.
Yeah. Well, this movie tells us that there's probably a Santa in it. But other than that, not much else. Let's go to Colin and get a festive 60-second synopsis.
All right. On one Christmas Eve, Scott Calvin's life is turned upside down. After he and his son Charlie catch Santa in the act on the roof of their house, old Saint Nick loses his footing and takes a tumble. With Santa incapacitated, it's up to Scott and Charlie to finish delivering toys to all the good girls and boys. They complete the mission, but when they return the reindeer and sleigh to the North Pole, Santa's head elf Bernard informs Scott that this wasn't a one-time deal. In accordance with the Santa Clause, by putting on the suit, Scott is now the new Santa. In the year leading up to the next Christmas, Scott begins to notice his body is going through some changes. Weight gain, rosy cheeks, facial hair, but it's not menopause, it's Santa Claus. Hold for applause. Hold for applause.
Oh, man, you rhymed it a third time. you're just spitting rhymes. Do you need us to drop a beat?
I wrote that, and then I took like a 10-minute break because I just didn't think it could get better.
And you did a victory lap around your house, just arms in the air.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Scott's ex-wife Laura and her new husband Neil are growing concerned about Charlie's obsession with Santa and what they see as Scott supporting the delusion and threaten to take away Scott's custody rights. And that's the synopsis, because the rest is just like Scott becoming Santa, getting imprisoned, you know, winning over his family, blah, blah, blah. We'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I truly respect your commitment and how blasé you said, yeah, hey, go into prison. Yeah. we've all been there.
Everyone's been part of a Santa jailbreak.
Yeah.
Oh, boy, the Santa Claus. Yeah, I mean, this is a modern classic. It's one of those that I got sucked into the Santa Claus universe. I've seen all three movies and the first season of the series. I am waiting for a few more to build up in the second season before, so I can just binge the shit out of it right around Christmas. And I'm saving that one for Christmas. That's my Christmas present to me. That's how sad I am in my life. So, you know, Santa Claus, I enjoy it. I like Tim Allen. We've explored Tim Allen before with Galaxy Quest. I was a home improvement watcher. I watched Last Man Standing until it like got canceled and then renewed and everyone was recast. And I got weird at that point. I even watched his reality show, or not reality show, I guess, like it was an actual home improvement show that he had with Richard Karn on like Discovery Channel or one of those kind of channels where they re-teamed up to do some shit. I like Tim Allen. Yeah, you know, coked up Tim Allen, you know, classic. Fatherly Tim Allen, granddad Tim Allen, all of them, and Santa Claus Tim Allen. I love Tim Allen stuff. I love the Santa Claus, and there we go. I was surprised, though. I don't own this movie on DVD. I think I might have lost it in the divorce. I could have sworn I owned it. So I had to watch the Disney Plus version, which I read a couple things have been changed with. So, yeah. Well, Joel, I mean, I just shouted it out to you. I didn't even bother asking whether you had a history with this movie. I just said, want to come on for the Santa Claus?
Yeah.
So, what
and
kind of history?
I said, sir, yes, sir. My history with this movie, I haven't seen it in many years. I must confess, I used to really enjoy this movie. I used to think very fondly of it. So I was like, sure, I'll come on. I'll support the Santa Claus. It used to be one that was just like on the TV all the time.
Yeah.
It was just on a channel of some kind playing. So
that's how you make a modern classic, you know?
That's just it. You just you imbue it into everybody's brain. Like they have no other choice because there's nothing else to watch.
Non-stop, yeah.
Yeah, so I've had like this IV drip of the Santa Claus in my life. And
you're mainlining that. Yeah, I guess so.
Straight into the vein.
Yeah.
But it has been many, many years since I've sat down to just actually watch it without like commercials and using it as a background task. Mm-hmm. And it's held up in some ways.
Yeah, we'll get there. Yeah. Don't worry about that. Yeah. Now, what about you and your history with like the franchise? Do you stop at one or did you go on to all of them?
I remember watching number 3 in theaters when it came out. That was the last one that I watched. I think it was the last time I watched the Santa Claus property.
Okay.
I used to really enjoy these movies. Yeah. But they just kind of fell off in the way that I look at Tim Allen a lot now. And as you put it so eloquently, coked up Tim Allen. I can't see him as anything but. I look at him and I'm like, ah.
I like Grandpa Tim. He's Buzz Lightyear.
You're right. My bad. Yeah.
You can't speak ill of Buzz Lightyear. He's a goddamn national treasure. Well, Colin, now if I remember correctly, you have not seen them all. What is your history with the Santa Claus?
Yeah, I remember. I've seen the first one like countless times. It's like a yearly watch for me. I think the Santa Claus was like the first Christmas movie that I really liked after Home Alone.
Okay,
like that was kind of my first love, and then this was the second Christmas movie that ever like kind of captured my attention.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I watched the second one for the first time last year. I've never seen the third one. That's the one with like Jack Frost or whatever.
Yeah, Martin Short. And, yeah, it's timey-wimey shit.
Yeah, and then I started watching The Santa Claus Is, the first season, this week.
Okay. And you don't think you need the third movie for context when it comes to the series?
I don't know. I guess the question is, do I? I don't feel like I do yet. Okay. I feel like you definitely need the second one to understand, like, Mrs. Claus.
I mean, it's kind of like Cobra Kai. As the seasons of Cobra Kai are going on, you need to know more of that backstory from the original series. I mean, eventually you're going to need to know some Hilary Swank shit, I'm sure.
Well, they got one season to let us know. I don't know. Maybe. We'll see. Maybe if I reach a point in the Santa Clauses where I'm extremely confused, maybe I'll go watch the third one.
Yeah, this Disney series is very complex. I'm having trouble following.
Yeah. But I mean, there's something about the third one to me that looks like that's like the sellout movie. Like that's where the franchise sold out. And
yeah.
And I don't know. I can't get on board with it just yet. Unless it's an absolute need. It's like Tokyo Drift. You know, it kind of killed the franchise, and then it got brought back.
Yeah.
Oh.
See,
this
I know
Tokyo Drift. We're not gonna know it.
No, I noticed on this viewing, I realize it's number 2 that I'm most familiar with, and that I most associate with this franchise. Like in a way, like or maybe it's even a combination of 1 and 2, but there was a part of me that was kind of waiting for the scene at the school where he gives all the teachers presents, you know? And it's like, oh, no, wait, that's the second one because he's trying to woo a Mrs. Claus. So I think I'm more fond of the second one, like, or at least more familiar with it, I think. I've probably seen it more times.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, let's jump into The Santa Claus, directed by John Pasquin, who, when I was looking at his IMDb, he directed like 39 episodes of Home Improvement, 73 episodes of Last Man Standing. who does he like working with? Yeah. And he got to work with Sandy B in Miss Congeniality 2. He was the director of that, too. Produced by Robert F. Neumeyer, Brian Riley, and Jeffrey Silver. Written by Leo Benvenuti, Steve Rudnick, And those two guys, they seem like they're a writing team. They've got like very similar credit lists, and we would have talked about them with Space Jam. But they're all things Santa Claus. They've got their finger in every single Santa Claus pie in one way or another, whether it's just characters based on characters by or whatever. But yeah, these guys are all things. All things Santa Claus. Anyway, so when this movie...
I love that's their niche, you know? Yeah.
They can write the hell out of a Santa Claus movie, yeah. Well, for 1 week in November 1994, Tim Allen had the number one movie, the number one TV show, and the number one New York Times bestseller for his book Don't Stand Too Close to a Naked Man.
I was about to ask, does Tim Allen know how to write? That's remarkable.
He does. Indeed, he does.
Just like generally, like he can like use his hand and stuff and make some prose. Not the fact that he wrote a whole book. That's even more impressive. But
I mean, he can at least tell somebody what to write.
That's true. Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, he strikes me as more of like, what do they say when it's like dictated, not read?
Yeah.
That type of guy.
Yeah. Pretty much. Yeah. So, I found it interesting, again, because I am more familiar with the second movie, that when we have this Christmas party that we open the movie with, Peter Boyle is the boss in this movie, but he's Father Time.
Frank Barone? Oh, is that an Easter egg for the third movie?
Isn't Father Time in the second one, too?
Oh, I don't remember.
I can't remember.
I've only seen that one once.
Oh, okay. Like, there's the council of, like, Father Time and the Easter Bunny and a couple other guys. The Sandman.
Yeah.
Tooth Fairy.
Yeah. No. I remember the Tooth Fairy.
Yeah, none of those ring a bell. Maybe that is only the third.
Let's see. And he's been in a lot of movies.
What, Peter Boyle?
You're right. He's uncredited as Father Time in the Santa Claus 2, yeah.
Yeah. So it's just like, I don't know, does this
and
boss...
And Santa Claus 3.
Does this boss die and become Father Time?
Where are our Santa Claus lore masters when you need them most?
Right? Yeah. I know. I couldn't book them. That's why we've got Joel Sims here.
Yeah, that's fair.
We were hoping that class you took in your first year of college... would come back to tell us, you know, like you had that weird like Norse mythology class, if I remember.
I had a history of visual communication class, which I skipped. Just watched the Santa Claus one over and over again for 4 hours a week every week.
Yeah.
So you got the right guy at least.
Yeah. Did you go Clockwork Orange style with it, with your eyes propped open? And...
I had little mini Christmas candy canes.
Oh.
Like the ones that you throw away. Yeah, I had those ones sticking to my eyes.
But, well, here, Colin, we've talked about Peter Boyle. Let's talk about some of the other people in this movie, though. Let's run down this cast list. I've got some alternate castings for you. Surprise, surprise.
Right, well, let's start at the top of the call sheet with Tim Allen as Scott Calvin, a.k.a. Santa Claus.
Now, do you want them all, or do you just want the crazy ones?
I mean, the crazy ones. Let's skip through the, like,
Stallone is weird to me. Sylvester Stallone is on that list. Mike Myers, Rowan Atkinson... Alan Rickman, I feel like, is a very odd choice. Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, there's a lot of Bill Murray, Chevy Chase, Robin Williams, Tom Hanks, blah, 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 right? But yeah, I do find it odd that you would think Jerry Seinfeld would be a choice that you should go for, or Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's only good for a movie like...
All the Way.
Jingle All the Way.
I could see Seinfeld in this role.
Yeah.
Schwarzenegger, I could see just so for the roof scene, right? So you could be like, get down! Like, from the, like, you could have that, his signature.
What is the deal with reindeer?
I mean, the dialogue is, like, I don't know. I actually think you could easily plug Jerry Seinfeld into this movie.
And it would
flow seamlessly.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
Sylvester Stallone, I think, I would have liked to see that movie.
Merry Christmas to all. Wow, we're really good at that.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I wanted to just see if anyone would make an attempt at a Stallone, and I'm glad that you guys did.
Hey, yo, Adrian.
That's what you bring me out here.
Well, that's
no,
yeah,
Charlie.
People that can do like good impressions, like it's a magic trick. I'm impressed. I wish I had more impressions, other than the bang on ones you just fucking heard.
I was about to say.
Let's pretend that Christopher Walken was also a option for this movie.
Yeah, that's right. Christopher Walken. Yeah.
No, that's bad.
Cut the cameras. Cut the cameras. Yeah.
Anyway, moving on. Next on the list.
Sorry, I was just recovering from a terrible. Eric Lloyd is Charlie Calvin. Did he go on to do anything of note?
Not that I know of. And no other kid actors that I saw in any of my lists. Yeah. It's just him. Ooh. It was him all day.
Wendy Crewson played Laura Miller.
Yeah, our good son mom.
Oh, that was her.
Yeah. Oh. Staring out at the ocean longingly because mourning her dead child. Yeah.
Somehow she looks younger in this movie.
Yeah, maybe it's the...
But it's the same
cut.
Year, isn't it?
It's
94?
Maybe. Or no,
well, she was on a set
93.
With Tim Allen. So you can presume that she did some coke and it kept her skinny.
Yeah, there you go. That sounds right. Judge Reinhold is Dr. Neil Miller, the unsung hero of this movie, I think.
Oh, shit. You know what? I realized I didn't write down any of the fucking Laura alternate castings. There was a whole shitload of those ones, too. Well, but Judge Reinhold, I mean... We've got people like Jeff Daniels and Steve Guttenberg were alternate castings on that. But the one that I found odd was Shooter McGavin. Christopher McDonald was one of the choices. And I'm like, no, Neil can't be played by Shooter McGavin.
I mean, the
I
alternate...
love that they were just gunning for pretentious looking white guys. They were like, make a guy who looks a little Ivy League.
Yeah.
Sign him up.
Yeah. Yeah,
the alternate castings that I can see for Laura were three Patricias.
Yeah, Patricia Heaton was one of them.
Patricia Richardson, Patricia Clarkson, Patricia Heaton, and Kate Burton.
Well, see, and it's funny because a lot of these people that are on this list for the Neil kind of look like Judge Reinhold, like John Ritter, Bradley Whitford, John Hurd, who is like the dad from Home Alone, Ted McGinley, who is the guy from Married with Children, the neighbor from Married with Children. Like, all these guys kind of look like Judge Reinhold. I don't know. Ryan Stiles is on that list, too. Like, come on.
Legend.
Ryan Stiles looks just like Judge Reinhold.
I'm surprised that Richard Karn wasn't an alternate for Neil, because it seems kind of like when I'm looking at the alternate casting, at one point, this was just going to be like a Home Improvement, I don't know, alternate reality movie.
Well, it basically is when you look at some of the actual dialogue that happens in this movie. There are so many references to Home Improvement in this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
David Krumholtz plays Bernard, the head elf.
Yeah.
Paige Tamada is Judy the elf. We talked about Peter Boyle. Kenny Vadas is the ELFS leader.
Well, if you... If you
we
go
have Frank Welker, of course, playing the reindeer.
Yeah, if you go down far enough, you got Reindeer Noises by Frank Welker. I always love it when Frank Welker shows up because he's always in these movies.
Is this just like his niche? Is that his go-to? It's like just, voice of an animal?
Well, Frank Welker, he is the voice of Fred from Scooby-Doo, famously.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But he and is Megatron. Also... And Megatron. So he is like, he is one of those all-time legends, but if you go through his IMDb, he has like 1,000 credits, like, you know, like not even being hyperbolic, like legitimately 1,000 credits, because he will come in and he'll make fucking reindeer noises for the Santa Claus out on top of like all the other amazing voice work he does. He's been on Futurama, he's been on The Simpsons, he's been on like everything.
Yes, somebody should update his IMDb or his Wikipedia page. But a interesting stat is that He has a he's the third highest grossing actor of all time as of 2011, with a total worldwide box office gross of $17.4 billion.
Jeez.
I just checked his IMDb, and he has 887 credits.
Yeah.
Jesus. Okay, I guess I am being hyperbolic.
I mean,
but I mean,
at that point, you're not really.
Yeah.
Most people get like 40.
Hey, if
And
he
that's a
gets
good
like
career.
yeah, if he gets another like 15 years of career, I mean, he's gonna cross. Maybe I'm thinking Mel Blanc. Mel Blanc's is over 1,000. But anyway, the Santa Claus. Yeah, let's talk the Santa Claus. So, yeah, we get the toy company speech from Scott. We get a quick glimpse at, okay, this guy's a dick. And then he's driving home. I do like him driving home on the phone and just lying his way through everything. But this seems like it should be the opening of the movie Liar Liar.
Yeah, it's very similar.
Stuck in
It's
traffic.
also similar to like Jingle All the Way.
Oh, yeah, it is, isn't
Like
it?
the it seems like in the 90s there was, you know, the just terrible father
Yeah.
trope was really popular.
Yeah, I mean,
Absolutely.
yeah, you've got this kid that doesn't even want to spend Christmas Eve with his dad. Like, this kid hates his dad. He visibly hates his dad.
This movie has two of my favorite recurring tropes in
Oh.
movies of like around this time. And it's
Yeah.
both like the most divorced dad in the world is like the lead. And that he's just like
Yeah.
this, they always gonna paint him like they're like, oh, he's just this good for nothing. And it's like, that's not
Oh,
very kind or human.
yeah.
And also being like, we're gonna make sure that people know that this guy's a bad guy, or you're not really supposed to like him. So we're gonna make him a therapist. Such a common thing. Later on, oh, I love it. Makes me not trust therapists either. It's great.
Well, and what I love about Judge Reinhold's delivery is just he's such a punchable therapist. Like you really like you want to hug the guy, but then you want to punch him right in his face. Like it's just,
It's perfect.
like yeah, he's got that perfect balance of likable and hateable. Like
It's just tremendously like smarmy.
yeah, as far as when as the series goes on, I mean, ultimately, like I love Neil as a character. He doesn't get much to do in this movie except for wear those amazing Cosby sweaters. But like it's just other than that, you know, he plays the part right, at least. I think I love Judge Reinhold in this movie.
Yeah, I kind of wonder what it would have been like if you played. To go back to Liar Liar, if you played it a little bit more like Cary Elwes.
Hey, champ. Yeah.
Yeah, like where he was just like a little bit more of the good guy. Because I remember when we did Liar Liar, at the end of it, you just feel really bad for
Yeah.
that guy. Whereas I don't really feel like I felt that bad. I mean, I
Well,
guess you
and
don't really need to feel bad for Judge Reinhold in this one, but
I guess so. I mean, there is something that is a little, I don't know, serial killery behind Judge Reinhold's eyes ultimately. I guess this is something I've realized is, you know, after watching things like Beverly Hills Cop, we've seen him a couple times on this. There is something that's a little, does Judge Reinhold just not blink a lot? Is that what it is? Like, there is something that's a little intensely friendly about him.
I didn't. I'll have to watch it again. I've never noticed.
Do all of Judge Reinhold's characters have like a sinister past that we don't know about? Like, where are the bodies?
That's a part of his act. It's part of his thing. He always works in. He's like, when I was younger, I was in a traumatic childhood accident.
My given name wasn't Neil when I was born. Oh no. I took that identity from a dead hitchhiker. Started my life over. I'm Neil, the therapist.
What an ambitious goal to go into after restarting the life.
Yeah.
Kind of commendable. I like him. I'm back full circle. I like him again.
Yeah.
I like Neil. One of my favorite moments of the whole movie is when they walk up on Scott when he's on the bench in the park and he's just looking at him flabbergasted. He's like, "Here's my card."
Yeah. Call me. Call me.
Yeah. Or even when they're in the therapist's office and he's like, "I am a doctor." I don't know. That got me every time.
That cracks me up.
The one thing I've always wondered about this movie is how people feel about just the absolute truth bomb that hits you like 5 minutes into this movie when he gets there and we find out that Neil, this lovable Neil, is going to tell the kid that there's no Santa Claus. And I don't know, like, what's your take on this movie just outright putting it out there that no, there is no Santa Claus? I mean, because they're spending the entire movie doing damage to control of saying, no, wait, come on. We told you there isn't, but look at all this evidence we're providing. I don't know.
It is interesting considering it's marketed to a group that likely still does believe in Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I was trying to think if I still believed in Santa Claus when this movie came out in 1994. I'd have been 10, so probably not. Or yeah. I would have been 8. Yeah, probably not.
Yeah.
But yeah, it is. I wonder if this movie ruined any childhoods in that way.
Well,
did your parents tell you that they have to have like a sit down talk and tell you that there is no Santa Claus, or was it more of just like a discovery of maturity?
I just pieced it together. I love to imagine that there was a time. Because obviously, I when I think of this movie, I think of like commercials every 10 minutes. Where at that scene, which is about give or take maybe around the 10 minute mark of the start, he goes, "I just need to tell you, there's no Santa Claus." And then it cuts to like a Pepsi, like a Crystal Pepsi commercial or something, and some kids are just shattered, just stuck in anticipation, waiting.
Yeah, and then like, you know, they cut to like some emergency news broadcast, so the kids never see the ending of it.
Yeah.
I guess, Sean, did you watch this movie with your kids, and do they not still believe in Santa Claus?
I believe they have seen this movie before. Okay. I don't know where they are in that. I know for me, I found the hiding spot that my mom had for everything.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's hard to believe after that, but I was fortunate though, because once I hit 11, the age where my parents might have taken Santa away from me, they had another child. And so now all of a sudden I was part of this family that, you know, had kind of two generations of siblings. I got to keep Santa going for another 10 years, right? Like it was a pretty sweet deal on my end.
Did they sit you down and say, Sean?
Yeah, that's
right.
We
need you to know.
Yeah, they just knocked out all the talks all at once. It was birds and bees. It was the Santa Claus. All of it. Easter Bunny, Tooth Fairy. They just boom.
It all out.
It was a sad day. It was a sad day. And then I turned around and said, so I got my girlfriend pregnant.
And then they went, oh, we were a little late on the birds and the bees then.
So anyway, the Santa Claus. So it's convenient that he is a toy manufacturer. I mean, of course he is, right? But, you know, the thing that frustrated me is that for a toy manufacturer, they don't show any of the toys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They show the ice sculpture of the doll at the Christmas party.
Yeah. Well, at the North Pole, too, like... This is one of those movies that uses like the shitty toys. You know, like who's asking for this fucking, you know, piece
Raggedy
of shit?
Ann.
Yeah, this fucking Raggedy Ann and this.
There's only so many wooden trains a boy can get before he goes to fucking postal.
Yeah. Yeah, what kid in 1994 is asking for the fucking, the wooden horse on wheels? Like, at least Elf had Etch-a-Sketches, you know? Like,
stepped up at least a little bit.
Yeah. But so, anyway, they drop off Charlie and he doesn't want to stay, but Scott decides to cook supper. And the fire extinguisher line, this is one of those examples of, it's just Home Improvement, because when the turkey catches on fire, he says the line of, "This is why it's always a good idea to have a high quality fire extinguisher in your kitchen," is a line like straight out of Home Improvement.
Yeah.
like verbatim, I'm sure.
I'll guarantee. That's another trope that I absolutely love in these kind of movies, is like the schluppy dad who will like burn a pot of water. Mm-hmm. Like it'll just go straight into flames. You know, like the second they someone just walk into a kitchen, there's an ambulance on the way.
Yeah. Can't ever have a dad that's good at anything.
No.
That wouldn't make for a very good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's against the rules.
It is. Yeah. But so they end up at Denny's. And this is a real Denny's in Ontario. Yeah. And I think that also means it's time for Sponsorship Corner. You thought I was going there with the toys, but I was sneaky. I held on to it for a minute longer.
I'd be on the edge of my seat there.
Oh, well, see, it's actually kind of lame this week. Always on the lookout for product placements and movies. This week, The Santa Claus is brought to you by Ford and Volvo Vehicles, Sony Electronics, Swiss Vitamins, Federal Express, Milton Bradley Mystery Date, Oscar Mayer Weenie Whistle, and Denny's. That's it. Plus the possibly real The Beer Store, which is in the parking lot of Denny's. And if it's a real Denny's, it could be a real The Beer Store. The Nursery, Teatoria Il Timone, which was the restaurant he pulled up in front of, and Swiss Interiors, and the definitely fictional The Rose Suchek Ladder Company. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
Oh, I was expecting a lot more product placement in this movie than we got.
I was stunned. That's why, like, when I had it in my head about that scene in the gymnasium where he's just giving out presents to all the teachers, you know, the teachers are playing toss across and like all these old games and things, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be brutal. But no, not this one. Not Santa Claus 1. Nope.
So at what point in this review do you just want to turn into a Santa Claus 2 review, just for your sake?
Well, no, that doesn't matter. I have things to say about Santa Claus 1. It's just they didn't know they had a $200 million movie on their hand, I guess. And so they didn't realize how much real estate they could have sold in this movie. You know? Could have had him with like a fucking Pirelli logo across the back of his Santa jacket or something, like he's a NASCAR driver, you know? Makita Tools, some shit like that.
I want to see Santa in some racing leathers.
Well, you almost get that. You get his fireproof suit, right?
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty close.
But the fireproof suit didn't have a bush light across the back.
No, so. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So now with Denny's, he burns the turkey and they go looking for a restaurant that's open. Denny's is the only thing that's open. And he says, "Oh, hey, Denny's, come on. You'll enjoy it. It's an American institution." And then we get the hard cut to the Japanese businessman all laughing and is this joke racist? I can't quite tell whether it's a racist joke or whether it's just supposed to be the contradiction of what he just said and it's a harmless joke.
I think it's probably, well, you know, the problem is my heart goes Tim Allen when I go, racially motivated joke. But I thought that it was just to show that it's like, these are the only other people that are here on Christmas Day. Like, there's no other families. It's just, like, you know.
All these Japanese businessmen. Yeah, okay.
But of course.
It gave me a tingle. That's all I'm saying.
For some reason, I didn't even, like, clue in that it was a Denny's. I think I was, you know, like, at the end of A Christmas Story, how they go get Chinese food?
That's
right. I thought that's what was happening.
And maybe it was an homage to that or something like that, in a way. I mean, and far less racist than it was in A Christmas Story when, you have them singing like "We Wish You a Merry Christmas" with their very thick accents. Yeah. Well, so at bedtime, Charlie has a million questions about Santa, and then he hears a clatter, though. He hears a clatter. I see, and I brought it up in sponsorship corner, there rose such a clatter company. I have always been a sucker for that gag in this movie. When they go outside to check on the, and it's a ladder. It's the Rose Such a Clatter Company.
I think it's great. It cracks me up.
Yeah. Okay, so he accidentally kills Santa. Now, when Santa is lying on the ground, buried in the snowdrift, and he's clearly dead, before he disappears, the dead Santa waves goodbye. Why?
Okay, so.
Oh, you've thought about this. Okay.
I think that this movie, reflectively, watching it again as an adult, haven't watched it nor thought about it, really, in many years. This movie's kind of horrifying. It's kind of crazy.
A little bit.
Like, imagine you are Tim Allen, and you're just trying to do your best. You're trying to be a supporting, loving father. You're trying to care. You're trying to do this and that. All of a sudden, so you think somebody's breaking into your home on Christmas, your kid's day. You're like, oh no, here comes trauma.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, caramba. And you go outside, you startle this burglar. You look, they fall off your roof, they die in front of your child. And you go, uh oh, who's this hooligan? You go to check, and it's like, put on my clothing. Do it. So as anybody would, you listen to the dead now burglar on the ground.
Yeah.
And you put on the costume to appease your child. And then your whole life dramatically changes immediately. Reality starts shifting around you. Nobody believes you about any of it, except for your kid, who is not a very reliable narrator. And honestly, not to jump too far ahead, I don't even think he likes his dad. He likes that his dad is Santa Claus. But that's it. Imagine the only redeeming quality that you have in the eye of your child is this curse that's been placed upon you.
Well, the end of the movie, he doesn't even say, "I love you, Dad." He says, "I love you, Santa." So
I love you, Santa.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, we all love Santa. But I was just watching that, and I was like, maybe I'm overthinking a little bit. I'm like, yeah, maybe I'm allowed to just enjoy things as a charming kids movie. But I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
I never really thought about it like that, but you are right. It is a weird, like, Charlie, like, yeah, does, I wonder, like, would Scott would just live the rest of his life wondering if Charlie even loves him for him as his own dad?
Yeah.
And then I see in the Santa Clauses, like, is Charlie even around? Like, he has his own kid with Mrs. Claus.
Yeah.
Also, throwing it right back to the very end of the movie, the last thing Charlie says is, "Nah, I'm going to join the family business."
Yeah.
Charlie wants to kill his dad. He wants to kill him. He knows how he gets into the family business.
It's like Star Wars, right? Yeah, the Sith has to kill his master, right? So he's gonna learn how to do everything. Yeah. But one day when his dad's not looking, dunk, little nudge in the back.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Stick right in the numbers. Yeah, we're going over the edge of that roof.
I was trying to figure, is Santa dead? Like, is the Santa who felt like, is he dead?
That's
like,
why I'm wondering. He waves.
You just get to be.
That's. I think that if we're going with my dark theory here, I think he's like, I have been free.
Yeah, I've been free. I was gonna say,
finally.
the chains are off. Yeah.
I was having flashbacks to this movie from last year because I remember I had watched it right around the time that we also watched Ernest Saves Christmas.
Okay.
And I kept like drawing comparisons to, because in that movie, it's like Santa is also, and I was like, oh, like it reminded me of the werewolf curse where it's like to be free, it's like you need to You need to infect somebody
yeah,
else.
Yeah, yeah, because you're right. In earnest, Santa, yeah, he basically retired. He just became Seth, and he goes off to bang Mrs. What's-Her-Face. Yeah, like, yeah. He was going to get some at the end of that movie.
And I was kind of like, I mean, I don't know how the Santa Clauses pans out, but I feel like there's a missing Santa Claus story where, like, Scott needs to, like, somehow meet this Santa again in the real life, like working at Home Depot or something. Like, I don't know. There just needs to be some sort of connection.
Yeah.
Like, well, I want to know what happened
ghost?
To that guy.
You could go Force Ghost yeah. with it. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Well, one thing I do want to say about the Santa Claus aspect of this movie is, boy, oh boy, is the reindeer flying effect terrible.
I think all the CG effects in this movie are awful.
The effects in this movie do not hold up at all.
No.
And yeah, I also have to say that in the scene where, you know, the first time they fly with these reindeer and for some reason end up on street level, even though the reindeer are supposed to know what they're doing, and they pull up next to that delivery truck. Colin, I think we found him. I think we found the worst fake driver in all the movies that we've watched on this podcast.
Wow.
He was like this as the, like, he was doing the milking the cow. That's what he was doing, was the milking the cow. Yeah. While the reindeer pulled up next to him. Yeah. Oh.
There was just turbulent conditions on that specific street. Terrible. You never know.
Yeah. So
I will say though, the only thing that is all the visual, like the computer generated stuff, looked awful. I thought the reindeer and the close-ups that they got of the reindeer, I thought they looked great. Like whatever.
The creature effects. Yeah.
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 They had scarily human eyes, but you know.
A little bit. Yeah. No.
So does Tim Allen.
Comment. And Judge Reinhold. Yeah. No, the I enjoyed the animatronics for sure on the reindeer as well, but oh god, every takeoff and landing was just it was painful to watch.
My favorite CG was when he goes through like the really skinny chimney and you see him get like Photoshop warp filtered into it. And then when they come out the bottom, because obviously the chimney for the five pieces, the whole wall shifts into a much more grand chimney.
Yeah.
And just, it looks like a Windows Movie Maker transition, mm-hmm. how they transition between the two things. Like it just kind of like swipes and blurs away.
Well, it's
as
just
the
like
other
the face the face transformation is one too, where he gets clean shaved and then he turns into Santa and it's like, ooh, that one was wonky. That one was rough. And every time they looked at the snow globe, it was this really weird, like, way that they were filming it, too. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But even with, like, the scene that Joel's talking about, the thing I thought was weird is, like, in my knowledge of Santa lore, Santa comes out of the chimney. But they make him come out of, like, a room that has its own fireplace, like, just on the side that he doesn't come out of. He just appears in, like, I don't know, as if it's like the fireplace is like a stove that's there with a tube that goes up. And then for some reason, it's sitting inside of like a broader chimney. But what purpose would that serve at all?
Well,
already vented.
Are you talking about the little girl that is sleeping there? Like the one that where it's the radiator that turns into a fireplace?
No, this one is like it's the one where he goes down the small tube. Like this, the time where he's like, "How am I going to fit down there?" And then it forces the whole wall.
Oh, I thought that
like,
was
right at the beginning.
I thought that was the radiator one. Well, I guess like all of them expand so that he can just walk out of them, right? I guess that's the idea: is no matter what, the fireplace is going to have to grow. Yeah, can't have him bumping his head. It's got a dangerous enough job. There's,
anything but that.
There's dogs. There's shotguns cocking. There's a lot going on in the middle of the night on Christmas.
And all that I'm saying is we saw what it takes to kill one of those Santa Clauses, and it's really not much.
No.
So if he smuts, like, bumps his head getting out of a chimney, it's over.
Yeah, it's hey, buddy.
Santa Clauses at Christmas.
Yeah. All you got to say is, hey, buddy, and you got a dead Santa. Words kill.
Yeah, is that like the kryptonite? Like, if you fall off the roof, is it that's like you're just officially not allowed to be sane anymore.
Well, that's the only thing he's worried about during the testing of the new suit technologies. Yeah. But what if I fall off the roof? That's all he cares about.
I did notice that too. There's lots of roofs.
Roofs. Yeah.
Roofs. Yeah. Roofs.
Yeah. Yeah. Tim Allen really, he hits roof pretty hard. Yeah. There's no roofs in this movie. No roofs at all.
Because he destroyed the roof of his mouth and cartilage in his nose.
But what do you have against Tim Allen, man? Like,
he snitched, man. He snitched.
He snitched on what? He got away.
When Tim Allen was once caught crossing the border into the United States with a suitcase full of drugs.
Yeah.
And he snitched and said it was all the guy that he was with, and it was very clearly not. And next thing you know, bish, bash, bosh, we got Home Improvement, baby. I don't know, maybe it's just an unconscious vendetta.
Yeah?
I don't know what I would do in that situation.
I mean,
I'm going to be in that situation.
We've attacked some things on this show before, but usually it's like friendly things like cilantro. I mean, you're coming pretty hard at Tim Allen. I'm Buzz Lightyear, man.
I mean, I don't know.
I'm kind of on Joel's side. Like, I don't really feel like Tim Allen is a praiseworthy human.
I feel like he's a pretty bad dude.
I don't think he's a praiseworthy. Like I said, I love Tim Allen, but it's because like I grew up watching all his shit, right? Like I was a huge Home Improvement fan. That was right in my wheelhouse. So, like it's, you know, he was one of my dads growing up. He's the dad that didn't go to prison though. One of my other dads went to prison. You know? So like this dad isn't as bad as that dad, you know? That's all I'm saying, right? Like, I like Tim Allen. He's still around, and I've enjoyed many of the things that he's in. Like, I like his other Christmas movie, too. Christmas with the Cranks, I think, is an underrated Christmas movie. I enjoy Christmas with the Cranks as well.
All Sean is saying is just lay off his dad, okay?
Yeah.
Leave my dad alone.
I'll come around at Thanksgiving. I'll shake his hand. I'll apologize.
I don't have daddy issues. I don't! So anyway, okay, how do we feel about Charlie in this movie? Because I want to say that
Joel kind of turned me on Charlie a little bit.
Yeah? Like the how come everything I want to do is stupid? I don't know. I like
Let it be known. The kid only wants to do what he wants to do the whole movie. This kid is guilt tripping. I don't think that, honestly, we don't really see a ton of their dynamic, but at least, like, yeah, no, they play as, like, the foppish dad stereotype of Tim Allen, but I'm like, he seems to at least care. It's not like he's, like, a total, like, nobody, like, sleazeball, just gone. He's like, I'm married to my job, and I have priorities. That's toy making. I don't know what that's what Tim Allen sounds like right now, but...
well, and he even showed up for the career day. Like he went out of his way to come for something at school. So I don't always show up.
He could be a worse dude. I think the kid's a little bit of a jerk.
Yeah.
I think that Charlie should have not been in this movie. Like similar to like Max and Liar Liar. I think he kind of starts off being should we be sympathetic towards him? But then it's very quickly like, no, we should not be like he needed to be more in the background and not like the main like lens.
Yeah,
basically.
I mean,
like, I don't know.
Let us not forget Jake Lloyd in Jingle All the Way, who was also a very annoying child. But at least with that kid, he wasn't in as much of it in the long run. Yeah, like yeah, this dad, either he is in his kid's life a lot, or this movie is only showing his every other weekend. Because like, he's around Charlie a lot in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know really what he did to make, I don't think they really talk about it, what he did to make Charlie like, I'm not even spending Christmas Eve with you, dude. I hate you.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Oh, it's a hard turn for a child that young.
Yeah. I don't think I ever put it together that like Laura and Neil were married. So they've been divorced like I don't know, I'm assuming like at least a few years at this point. So it sounds like but they don't really use that to paint. Because in like Liar Liar, it seemed like they were like recently divorced, you know, like things were, or like at least like maybe a year max.
Yeah.
But she wasn't in like a new relationship. Whereas here, she's like, Laura and Neil are like married, have a life. It seems good.
Yeah.
But obviously Scott, like, I don't know, judging from the Christmas party, like in high powered executive, like I'm assuming he was an adulterer, but I don't know.
Probably.
Knowing Tim Allen as well.
It just doesn't.
Hey, don't talk to Sean's dad like that, man.
Hey. Yeah, that's right. Well, you know, in the Tim Allen vein, though, we do get a couple of the lines that he slips in there just to make sure we know who he is. Because, like, the flying joke, you know, oh, it's okay, I lived through the 60s. I mean, there's that joke that he slips in. But I realized on this viewing, there's a lot of adult jokes that are slipped in this movie. Like, they really have a lot going on.
More than you would think for a Disney property as well.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was the 90s.
So yeah, he completes a night of Santa-ing, and then we end up at the North Pole. And so we found out that all these elves, you know, are just kids playing elves. I don't know how I feel about the kids playing elves. Which do you prefer? Do you prefer the elf elves, or do you prefer the kids playing elves?
I think that the motif of kids playing elves was kind of funny. Like, in that it was like, well, I can't say kind of funny. It's not like I was sitting there busting a gut, but I was like, oh, that's different. It's kind of charming. And they obviously make a lot of jokes about the fact that I was like, aha, no thanks. I'm 1,000 years old. I got shoes older than you, buddy.
Yeah.
The problem is, they're very clearly children. They don't seem like they're 1,000 years old in the way that they carry themselves.
No, definitely.
So maybe
not.
Those kids weren't like bullied enough or something before they hit the lot. But you know, they never tough lives.
Well, I know that with the future movies, like you end up with that Spencer Breslin kid, and I hate that Spencer Breslin kid. Oh boy, do I! That kid bothers me with a fiery passion. He's also in Cat in the Hat, but like this movie, you do have the one elf that is older than everybody with the David Crummels, his elf, the second insured, Bernard, right?
Yeah.
And okay, for some reason you have this one that is like older than the rest of them, but now he has shown up in like the Santa Clauses. And he does not look very young at all anymore. Like, he's definitely older than all of them in this movie, but he does not blend in anymore on the new series.
I'm sorry, I just can't stop laughing. You just kind of know we're talking about this one kid, this Breslin kid, the fiery passion with which you describe your distaste for them.
Yeah, well, but that's the kid from the next movie, so I didn't have to deal with him. Yeah, I mean, but Bernard, though, yeah, it's just, I don't understand, though, why we have this one elf that is clearly so much, like, is he 3,000 years old?
Yeah, what's elf, you know, aging look like?
I think that I prefer, I don't even know how to say this. I'm going to say I prefer the kids. No, that's not what I'm saying. I prefer the adults.
You would prefer adult elves, okay.
Adult elves, yeah. That's what I prefer.
Yeah, whether it's digitally shrunken people or whether it's like little people, either way you would prefer like an adult actor elf.
Yeah, because I just mean like, I think on face value, the children as the elves, like, it is what, but are we then going to say, like, is there no elf society? Like, do these elves, like, get married and have families? Well, then I can't buy them all being, like, children.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and these kids, they age out of it. Like, the girl that, what was the main assist? Judy, yeah. Judy is such a fun character. But you can't keep Judy after a couple movies because eventually she's not going to be a 10-year-old girl. Like, she's going to age out of it pretty fast. I don't know. Yeah, I think I'm with Colin, too. I think I prefer the adult actor elf.
I think that's just less of a suspension of disbelief.
Yeah. Oh, another line.
Everything else in this movie is so very clearly accurate and to you know, to the books.
Well, it
very
is
scientifically methodologically done. You know,
you haven't gone on SantaCam and seen the live feed from the North Pole. That doesn't
not
exist.
In a while, Sean. Not in a while. Because I checked the old NORAD tracker.
Yeah, I've done that with my kids before. Actually, that's been around since I was younger.
Yeah.
Back in the early days of the internet. So we another good line was when he's talking to Bernard about the Santa falling off his roof, and he says, "I have homeowner's insurance and a really good attorney. Well, not as good as my wife's, but I thought that was another good line." So we get a
tour. It's a very Tim Allen joke.
It is, yeah. We get a tour of the workshop and all the basic bitch toys, and Charlie gets a crystal ball from Bernard. And so we find out about the Santa Claus. It's not Santa Claus the person, it's Santa Claus the Claus. I've always loved the sight gag of the really tiny print on the card. Okay, I have a question about a line, because I don't know if I fully understand it. Judy's line. Seen isn't believing, believing is seen. Is this nonsense, or is it actually? I don't know if I follow the thread. Am I just an idiot?
Walk me through your process of what you think it means.
I don't even know. Seeing
isn't believing. Believing is seeing.
Yeah.
Well, I think in the context of Christmas, you could say that, like, as you become an adult, you can see Christmas, but it like loses its magic. But then when you like, I don't know, now that I have kids and I'm like, oh, my kid, he like believes in like Christmas. Like she loves Christmas. She believes. And so she sees like, she gets excited about Christmas lights no matter where she goes. She like sees the magic of Christmas. That's how I would say it.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like she's seeing more than just the idea of what Christmas is.
Yeah. Okay.
Whereas it's like, if you just saw... Cut the cameras. I had an example. Cut the cameras.
Yeah, this is it's one that it boggles my mind. I think it sounds more profound than it actually is.
Yeah, probably.
Like, I think you really have to think about it to be like, okay. But in the moment, you're kind of like, oh, yeah. Yeah. Believing is seen. No, wait. Believing is seen? What does that mean? Like that's where I get lost, is on the second half of that, is the believing is seen. I don't know. If I see some, seen isn't believing. I'm going to believe if I see. Aren't I?
Well, listen, I saw Tim Allen transform a wall into a tiny little back room that he got to scurry into a little home from. I don't believe that my fireplace can do that, because I'm not looking through the lens of like childlike wonder, where I wake up every year on December 24th and I say, I hope Tim Allen's going to be here this year, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas for all those people that still think that exact same thought, different idea, a different concept.
Well, we can't dwell on this too much, I guess. I see where Colin's going with it. I just, it's, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think I could be wrong, but like there is like a biblical quote about like faith. It is like, it's like belief in the things unseen, which could be what this quote is kind of like talking about, but trying to say it in like
they're putting
more,
the Christ back in Christmas.
Yeah, they're trying to do it in a little bit of a more, I don't know, Rupee Kaur, like whatever her name is, you know, new agey way.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But I agree with Colin.
Oh, another line I like, at the career day, where the teacher says, you know, well, thank you, Fireman O'Hara, and I'm sure the whole class will join me in saying sorry about your partner. There were just a lot of little cute ones slipped in there.
That one got a chuckle.
Here's something I found very interesting on this viewing of this movie, because I read some IMDb trivia before watching the movie. Did you know that there are elves hidden in this entire fucking movie?
What do you mean?
Well, there is an elf keeping an eye on Charlie in the classroom.
No, I did not know that.
When Charlie says that his father is Santa Claus, there is one kid in the back that does not laugh. And then Charlie, he ends up going back to his desk to get the snow globe out of his bag. And you, when he leans over to get the snow globe, you can see the kid and he's got pointy ears.
Oh.
Yeah. And so throughout the movie, there are kids dressed as elves. So at in the end scene, when Scott takes off at the end and, you know, to all a good night, and there is like six or seven kids that all run off down the street, those are all the elves from the movie that have been keeping an eye on things around Scott's life.
That's kind of fun. I got to
ask if that was
intentional or is that just like lazy production?
They've all got pointy ears.
But was it like, hey guys, we got to make a real quick turn around to like the school scene from the North Pole, so like,
oh, yeah,
just switch your costumes up and let's roll.
Someone forgot to take their ear off that day. I don't know. Well, the fact that the kid doesn't react when Charlie says my dad is Santa Claus, all the kids laugh at him except this one who just sits there straight faced, doesn't react at all.
Must be a bad actor.
Could be.
That's a fun thing.
I would
have liked it a little bit more if it was like those kids ended up being in the like the elf's squad or whatever to show, yeah, like, oh hey, we were there the whole time, like, because yeah, you got to think like Charlie is basically like the first son in, you know, to Santa Claus's president or whatever, like he's got to have protection.
That's true. Yeah,
they're
that's
not
right.
Just gonna, they're
Chelsea
not just gonna
Clinton.
Let this kid they're not yeah. just let this kid get abducted.
Yeah. Okay, now, here's another question I have. At the North Pole, he gets his pajamas, and then he wakes up in his own bed back at, you know, at home. Was he magically transported? Because Bernard can seem to also, like, magically transport.
I was thinking about the same thing when we were talking about the elves just being there. I'm like, is there some elf teleportation shit that we just don't know about? Because Bernard will just show up and just be, like, eating at the kitchen table like a demon.
Yeah. Because the question, the reason why I asked this is because of the ELFSs, the, I don't know, Colin, do you still have the name up in front of you? Whatever they are, the Liberation Elves.
Yeah.
They have to, like, jetpack from the North Pole to save Santa. Why didn't they just teleport if they have this fucking elf dust teleportation flu powder situation going on, you know?
Because how else were we supposed to get, again, some more of just the worst flying CGI you've ever seen in your life?
That's true. There was also a moment where a line that I caught was where Scott insults one of Neil's sweaters, you know, some joke about like this, I thought the circus was in town or something like that, and then when Scott leaves, Neil, like, turns to his wife and says, I told you I was right about this sweater. Okay, so now,
like,
what about Fat Suit, Tim Allen, in this movie? Now, I heard that the suit was a problem. He was overheating quite often in this suit. Or maybe it was the cocaine sweats, Joel. Anyway.
You're laughing. You're laughing?
I know I am.
Where's the joke?
Anyway, yeah, but he was also getting like terrible rashes from it, apparently. But yeah, this movie is strangely paced. Am I alone in thinking that?
No, I agree.
What do you mean?
Well, because the first Christmas takes up a good chunk of this movie.
Oh, and paced. Then, I thought, I don't know why, but for some reason in my head, I heard what you said, but I thought paced, like pasty. And I was like, what does that mean? Explain. But now I get what you say.
Yeah. But yeah, the first Christmas takes up an awful big chunk of the, you know, first third of this movie, the whole first act. And then the whole year flies by in the second act. And there's a lot of like fun stuff in there, like getting the list and all this problem that he has with gaining the weight and trying to shave. And
for on this watch, I felt I when I was a kid and watching this movie, I thought that everything after they get back from delivering the gifts was a lot more than it ends up being. Mm-hmm. Like, it's basically like kind of an expanded montage for the most part. Like, it not a lot happens. You're just kind of waiting for him to become Santa again, but it doesn't. I don't know. It just, everything kind of happens. There's not really a lot of, like, the Charlie stuff is just weird. Like, he's obsessed with Santa, obviously, but, like,
yeah.
It's just Neil and Laura. Like, it's just them coming in and out, being like, "What's happening to our boy? What are you doing?" Like, and you're like, okay, but, and then Scott is just like going about his business. I don't understand why he never stopped. Like, I get he's trying to stop himself physically, but why he doesn't ever just be like, "Fuck me, Santa." Like, I felt like it doesn't ever seem like he's actually fighting to not be Santa. Yeah. And I feel like that whole stretch should have been more like his internal, whatever, his struggle that he should have had should have been like, "I don't want to be Santa, but like, am I going to become Santa?"
Yeah.
Like, am I going to just embrace the Santa-ness? But that never really happens.
You want it to be a curse. You want that Santa curse movie. I mean, it came up in an episode last Christmas, yeah. I believe, was, yeah, you want it to be him chained to this, and oh my God. Yeah.
But I think in this movie, it's more just, it's more like about like acceptance. Like, I was never really sold on the idea that he was like adamantly against being Santa.
Yeah.
And I was never really sold on the idea that in the end he's fully on board and like gung-ho to be Santa.
It just kind of feels like he's really good at procrastinating. He's like, yeah. I know that, like, I gotta move. I know it's coming up. I know the eviction notice was put out there, but it's still like 2 months away. I got time.
Yeah, I'll find a place.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I like the first act of this movie, but everything after, when I wake up, I'm going to get a CAT scan. It's just, stuff happens. That's all this movie is after that point. Things happen. But for like no real reason.
And you're right. It does feel very montage-y because, like, you've got the scene where you've got the kids lining up to sit on his lap, which it's a cute little scene, but still, it's just this one little moment. And then you have when the list shows up, it's this one little moment, or his one rough day at work where, you know, he orders all the food and everyone's like, you know, fat shaming him. Yeah.
Like, they needed a scene like to end, like, where he, like, you know, maybe it's the, like, after the park, if that, where it was like, he's like, okay, I'm going to actually be Santa. And then Bernard like Miyagi's him. And then you have like an actual training montage where he's like learning how to dip a cookie properly. And he's like learning like reindeer flying technique. And he's learning like he's actually learning like things
stealth,
about being
stealth things for like getting around the living
being
room.
Like how to maneuver a canoe around a tree. Like, I don't know.
Yeah. You need the Monsters, Inc. training facility where you're tiptoeing through the room. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I wanted something like that to happen in this movie.
Yeah. No, just instead what you get is like all of a sudden they're at a lawyer to take away his visitation. Yeah, it's like just, that escalated quickly, right?
Yeah.
But then he just straight up abducts his child. Yes. See, now I was wondering about the time jump. Now, when Charlie and like when Bernard is there, he's eating a turkey leg, so it's Thanksgiving, right? Like, that's, he was supposed to come back on Thanksgiving. Bernard's there on Thanksgiving to take him back, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming so. Yeah,
so Scott just pulls Charlie out of school, abducts him, takes him thousands of miles away to the North Pole for a month,
and then when all is said and done, when everything gets finished and wrapped up, and his ex-wife is like, "Oh, I believe that you are Santa Claus."
Yeah.
After spending a feverish month being like, "My child is gone and I have no explanation. I can't find them anywhere. There's a police investigation." He just shows back up and she's like, "Oh, okay. I love you."
And they're all absolutely convinced that he is going to show up on Christmas. They think that his delusion of being Santa is that bad that he's going to fulfill his destiny and show up. Like, do they think that there's going to be like some sort of sacrificial killing happening on Christmas Eve? He's going to fulfill his destiny. His prophecy is complete. All this sort of stuff. The Santa murders. Oh my God. What a grim tale.
It's a curse.
But
it's
okay,
a curse,
so, but,
that's all I'm saying.
Yeah. But the time jump, I am right though. He has taken Charlie away for a month.
It yeah. seems that way, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Just checking. Yeah. I do like the little girl with the callback to the she's got the soy milk out for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he's lactose intolerant. Yeah, so we've got the next Christmas, we've got his second Christmas. Yeah. And once we do our second Christmas and, you know, and Scott gets arrested and then he gets busted out of jail by the ELFs, yeah, Charlie wants, like, to go with his dad for the rest of the night and he starts crying. Boy, oh boy, Charlie's crying is, like, absolutely terrible. That is... he gets better in future movies, but yeah, in this one, I mean, you know, we've said it before, because I mean, we just had a whole Macaulay Culkin month. You know, we just had
Culkvember.
It's hard to criticize a child, but like, out of some of the child actors we've seen in this podcast, he's not one of the better ones in this movie. Sorry to say. Sorry.
Don't apologize to me. It's all right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if it's him or if it's more just the character. I would almost say like the character is bad.
Yeah.
Let's not put all the blame on him.
Well, like you said, I mean, this movie is a little too Charlie heavy when it should be a bit more Scott heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because like even the extra little bit at the end where he calls his dad back immediately after his dad left. It's like, fuck, man. And you're going to insist on going on a ride, you know, only if your mom says it's okay. Like, this kid just, you know, he plays his parents against him. He's just, like, or against each other.
Master manipulator.
Like, he's just, yeah, master manipulator. Yeah, I think you're right, Colin. I should be a little easier on the kid himself, because I think it's just the character and the way the character is used in the movie. But still, I don't think I like Charlie, at least in this movie.
I don't think he's a lovable guy.
But then doesn't he become a bad? He becomes a naughty kid in the second one. I feel like
that's right. Yeah, he's like spray painting lockers and stuff.
The seeds were all there.
That's right.
They
only had to look. But why didn't Neil see it?
Damn it, Neil!
You're in his head. What? Not doing your job. I think that's the Santa Claus. There we go. Right? Nothing else? I don't think. No. Well, now Colin, Joel on IMDb, it scored a 6.5 out of 10 and has a Metascore of 57. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 72% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 65%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like, I don't know, I guess falling off a roof and landing in a snowdrift and dying? Hit us with some reviews!
This is embarrassing, I actually forgot. Let me pull some up here.
You have one job!
You have one job!
I have a feeling if this was a $190 million movie, that the reviews are going to be too glowing, which sometimes sucks.
Yeah. But it does have
this,
like, middle ratings, so.
I'm going to read this one. It's long, but I like the way it's starting. It's from Benjamin N., who gives 4.5 out of 5 stars and says, "My esteemed readers, it is with a heavy heart that I must express my disdain for the recent moving picture known as The Santa Claus. While I had hoped to enjoy a lighthearted holiday romp, I found myself deeply troubled by the implications of the film's central premise. For those not familiar with the picture, it concerns a man who inadvertently assumes the role of Santa Claus after the previous incumbent falls from his roof and perishes. While this may sound like a charming and whimsical premise, I fear that the true implications of the story are far darker. Consider, if you will, the implications of a world in which the role of Santa Claus is not a symbolic one, but a literal and physical one. The man who assumes this mantle is not merely dressing up in a red suit and spreading cheer, but is actually assuming a vast and complex responsibility that is far beyond the scope of any mortal man. Furthermore, what of the previous Santa Claus? What of his family, his friends, and his loved ones? The film seems to brush over these questions, presenting the previous Santa as little more than a caricature and failing to delve into the emotional ramifications of his sudden disappearance. In short,
I found the Santa Claus to be a deeply troubling and morally suspect work.
One that raises far more questions than it answers. While it may provide some momentary amusement, I fear that its true implications will linger long after the closing credits have rolled. That's the best review I've ever read on the show.
I'm trying hard not to look smug right now.
Yeah.
See? I'm looking very smug. That's the answer to that, is I'm looking very smug. I think that's I think they raised some fair points.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been a believer in the counter argument of but it's a fun Christmas movie. No. I want to read a 16-hour behind the scenes documentary. Everything that went into fleshing out the world of the Santa Claus for this one, for the first film. I want to see $20 million of the $23 million budget spent on just developing the whole narrative of it.
Mm-hmm.
I want this to be a 10-hour Netflix series with 1-hour long episodes that I can claw my teeth into.
You mean Disney Plus?
The moral bankruptcy of the Santa Claus world.
Yeah, no. You need an R-rated Disney Plus series is what you need. See, Netflix can't have the Santa Claus. The House of Mouse owns this.
Yeah,
it's funny. You go through the trivia and it's like, oh, hidden Mickeys in this movie. There's a couple moments in this movie where there's hidden Mickey Mouse heads. It's like, okay, Disney, gotta stamp everything.
Let the people know.
Yeah,
where was that in Brandon Corner?
All right, the next one is from an unnamed one, and this one's also long. I have never been a Tim Allen fan. It was never personal. I just missed the bandwagon. However, this year I decided to check out The Santa Claus and its two sequels, mainly because I had heard a lot about the movies, and I know they are highly regarded. After seeing The Santa Claus, I will say that it is a very good and entertaining movie. The production design is very well done and the cast does a very good job. That does not mean the movie is perfect, but it does work. Tim Allen is the main reason why. He is perfectly cast as Scott Calvin, a man reluctantly thrust into a job he never thought he would ever have.
Who would?
The supporting cast does a good job as well. One thing I like about The Santa Claus is that it avoids a few formulaic cliches. Scott is divorced, but is on at least somewhat friendly terms with his ex-wife and mother of his son, Charlie, played well by Eric Lloyd. What I like even more is that Charlie's parents do not get back together at the end of the movie. That's true. That was a critique of Liar Liar. However, there is one cliche that the movie does not avoid. Of course, nobody believes that Scott has taken over the mantle of Santa Claus. Everybody thinks he is knucking futs, oh, I get it, and tells him he should be ashamed of himself. He even loses custody rights for Charlie. All seems lost, but then something happens that makes everybody see the light and realize Scott and Charlie were telling the truth all along, and everybody who did not believe in Santa now does. Merry Christmas. Despite this minor setback, The Santa Claus is a good movie. Not a great movie, but a good one.
Knucking futs really tickled you, didn't it?
Yeah.
Poe Buddy's nerfect.
Yeah, Poe Buddy's nerfect. We've descended down the star ranking, even though the first one seemed to be
a negative review, but the prison still gave 4.5 stars.
But now we're at the 1 star, nameless reviewer. I was shocked to find out after watching The Santa Claus all the way through that it wasn't 2+ hours. It felt way too long. The story dragged on and on. Some parts of this film were incredibly boring. It was difficult to keep up with what was going on. I feel like one scene, spoilers ahead, Scott loses visitation rights to whatever the kid's name was because his mom and new partner think he's crazy. And at the end, they're just okay with him being Santa and burn the paperwork. It's just a lot to keep up with, and it really isn't even interesting. Please save yourself some time and go watch Home Alone instead.
Signed, Colin Stewart.
I'm picturing the person that wrote that first review just sitting in like a smoking jacket.
Oh yeah.
You know, in some velour and like a leather chair, mm-hmm. writing it by hand.
There's a
with a fountain pen.
Yeah, yeah. There's a cravat involved. In that.
Okay, let's end it with a 5-star review from Tim Stufkarm. What a jaw dropping, heart pumping, high octane, exhilarating thrill ride.
When I saw this
at the cinema on release, my shoes flew off from the excitement. Everything from the action to the cinematography, and not to forget the acting, was superb. Whoa. I have to credit the production team for the Xmas costumes and the director for the suspense and fantasy he created throughout. This movie makes Santa Claus a complex and interesting character, and Tim Allen nails it. He should have won an Oscar. He really immersed himself into the character. He's my favorite actor of all time. I remember I went straight home after the cinema and buried my hairdryer in the garden from the sheer excitement I felt. I bought this on DVD the second it came out in the store. I was that excited I forgot to put my trousers on. I love Christmas so much. It is my favorite time of year aside from March 4th, my neighbor's cat's birthday. And this movie captures the joy and merriment all the way through. Lobsters and ducks are featured about the right amount of times throughout the film. Not too much, thankfully, which is great. I accidentally broke my printer when I last watched this just the other day. All in all, a great Christmassy feel-good movie for all the family. 5 stars for me, without a doubt. My neighbor's cat is not answering any of my emails.
I was about to ask.
That was the burning question.
All right. Well,
there you go.
Yeah, that was an interesting one to go out on. The drugs kicked in halfway through typing that review. Yeah.
You know who was writing that review? Tim Allen.
Walked right into it. I love it. Yeah, I mean, the Santa Claus, I still like the franchise and everything that it brings. I have always thought it's just a fun take on Santa Claus and everything like that. And I do feel that it handles the subject matter in an interesting way, with the fact that they do tell you that it's that Santa is both fake and real at the same time in this movie. I haven't seen this one in a while. And so on this viewing, I kind of echo the sentiment of that second one, that second review you had, where it moves at weird paces in times. There was one point in this movie where I paused it to go pee, and I'm just like, holy shit, I've still got like half an hour left. Like, what the hell? Like, there is that moment where it was kind of a little bit draggy, and it just, the timeline was all off in it. So I don't know, like, I enjoy the Santa Claus franchise, but like, now that I've watched this one again after not seeing it for a while, I don't think this is my favorite, but I don't know. It was still kind of fun in places. It was, you know, I still love Tim Allen, despite what Joel...
Still love your dad.
Still love my dad.
Nobody can take that away from me.
Nobody can. I mean, you guys are blowing it out of proportion. Maybe I was too gushing of Tim Allen up at the top. But like I said, he's been in a lot of the things that I like over the years. And the Santa Claus franchise is one of those things. I just don't know if I like the Santa Claus one as much as I used to, compared to some of like the sequels. But I don't know, it didn't age as well as I had hoped. Some of the shine is missing. The CGI was terrible. It was, you know, yeah.
To hear that was the CGI they accomplished in 1994 on a $23 million budget, both like impresses me and astounds me a little bit to think of, again, like the quality of what it actually looked like.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Joel, I mean, stay on this train. What did you think of the rest of the movie, CGI aside?
CGI aside, I do agree. I think that the movie was it holds a bit of a special place in my heart. That I've seen it so many times, and I think the concept is very interesting.
Yeah.
It's a different take on a Christmas movie. It's a different approach to the idea. When I was younger, it made me wish that my dad was Santa Claus. But like, it's the pacing was really, really strange. I had the same thing happen where I was half an hour into the movie. I left to go grab, like, make some food. I realized I still had over an hour left. And I was like, it doesn't feel like I have over an hour left of this movie.
Yeah.
What are they going to do? I wonder. And then they just didn't. There really wasn't much. So it was very mixed reviews, because I remember the things very distinctly. I remember the first scene of the Santa on the roof. I remember falling. I remember, like, that for the first night of Christmas really distinctly. And I remember, like, the second Christmas from when I was younger. But everything else was just this, like, liminal gray area. And that hasn't really changed upon a second viewing.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Colin, what about you? The Santa Claus. I mean, it's an every year movie for you.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be an every year movie. No, just kidding.
This one is a hard one. It's like what Joel was saying at the top of the show. This is one of, I would call them, like, TBS Superstation movies.
Yeah.
It's like a Christmas movie where TBS just has their 24-hour, like, we're going to play Christmas movies all day, and this is going to be one of those movies, and it's going to play, like, no matter where you are at any time between December 1st and 25th, you'll find this movie on some TV station at night, and you can just check into it whenever you feel like. And that's... It's a great background movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I can best describe it. And I enjoy it. And there's a lot of fun, like, dialogue. Like, I didn't even talk. I love the brown liquor joke when they're in the principal's office there. Like, that, I thought that scene is gold. But, like, when you sit down and watch it and try to, like, dissect it, I'm like, it just completely, like, fell apart. Like, I don't know, a stale cookie in my hands. Like, it just.
Like,
just crumbled.
I love the first act. Like, I love like when you meet Scott, and I love everything to, like, they became becoming Santa. Like, all that I like, but everything after, I thought the execution sucks.
Yeah,
I don't like it as much, and it's just the story is just, like, it's just blah after that.
Yeah, I could have done with less Charlie. I'm realizing as well.
I mean, oh, you're now realizing that.
Well, no, that's something I realize on this viewing, I mean, is,
yes.
You know, like, one of the reasons I'm kind of partial to the second one is Charlie, even though he's a delinquent in that, he's a little less annoying, and he's a little less part of the story, because it's not, my dad's Santa, and I want him to take me on Christmas night, right? It's all about, no, he has to find this lady.
It's kind of weird, because I was thinking... This movie is kind of like, it's like an origin story movie,
yeah.
Like a superhero, but it's like he doesn't learn to become Santa. That's the thing that's bothering me is Scott never is taught or is forced to, like, learn how to become Santa Claus.
Yeah,
and it bothers me the more I think about it.
Yeah, no, I can get that. That makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, but like all origin stories, the second one is often better. Because you don't have to introduce the character anymore. But they didn't do a good enough job of fully introducing the character. Because there was too much Charlie. Too much Charlie. Well, there we go. That's the Santa Claus, and that's our show for this week. Oh, boy. A huge thank you, a huge festive thank you to Mr. Joel Sims. Joel, any last parting words for all our dozens of listeners out there?
Yeah, hello, all 13 of you. It has been an absolute pleasure being back. Thank you to Colin and Sean for having me and letting me inform the world about Tim Allen's misdiscretions. I encourage you to go look it up. You'll have a laugh at his mugshot. He's wearing a fun tropical shirt.
I have seen the mugshot, that's for sure. Yeah,
but of course it goes on my Christmas tree every year.
Joel might not be a Santa lore specialist, but he's definitely a Tim Allen Himalayan historian.
Other than that, I would like to, as I always tend to, give a warm appreciation for Walter Mondale. Always in our hearts, buddy.
If you... I'm sorry, it's just, it's like the longest running bit ever. If you like that show, all the usual things, share our posts, tell people about our show, word of mouth, you know, spread all the word for people, you know, this holiday season, give us the gift of telling people about our show, or go over to whatever podcast app you listen to your podcast on and give us some stars. 5 stars would be great. You know, like, say something nice if you want. It's up to you. But, you know, like, just help use those algorithms to help drive us up the charts and help us get noticed. Or if you want to be a producer of the show, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne. Become part of our Patreon family and you become an executive producer, so you get a shout out just like Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
Drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
Shit. That went by fast. Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter and the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. And if you want to hear more from me and my other job and my day job of being a bus driver, check out my other podcast, In Front of the Yellow Line, anywhere pods are cast. Oh boy, Christmas, Colin. Next week, we have, which one do we have?
Returns?
We have one of the two, yeah. It's, I don't know which order we decided on for those, but yeah.
Well, it'll be either Batman Returns or
Nightmare Before Christmas. Tim Burton Christmas. Yeah.
Well, one is only Tim Burton Presents, so.
One's only Tim Burton Presents Christmas, yeah.
Yeah, it'll be a good time. Either way, you'll show up here, you'll listen, and you'll have a good time.
Yeah, it'll be something Tim Burton. So there we go. So until next week, I'm Sean Wells.
And I'm Scott Calvin.
And over there is Walter Mondale. And join us next time when we take a look at another movie, a Tim Burton Christmas movie on I Used to Like This One.
Riffs.